Hello, Taptralians. Dave Morales here. Thanks for tuning in to Tapped In. This podcast is an extension of the Bellingham Tap Trail, and we are excited to have you in our cozy virtual living room. Today we'll be sitting down with Jason Harper, who along with his wife Kim are close to opening Stemma Brewing here in town. But first, today's Tap Trail conversation is brought to you by Hoppus Real Estate. Specializing in Whatcom's core neighborhoods, understanding the wants, and fulfilling the needs with community, craft, and comfort in mind. Located at 1012 DuPont Street across from the Leonard Street's Coffee House, you can find them on Facebook and Instagram. So you may have been aware of Stemma Brewing as Hoppa Brewing. They're soon to be the next brewery on the Bellingham scene, and we talked about the name change, how the thought of opening a brewery in town actually happened 10 years ago, and how when it comes right down to it, Jason's just like any other guy out there. Enjoy the podcast, and I will see you on the other side. Thanks for coming.
Thank you. Thanks so much.
I know that you should be at the brewery right now. But hey, you know, drinking beer and talking about it.
That's always fun.
It's free publicity, essentially, right?
Thank you.
Yeah, so you're the next up-and-coming brewery, you're shooting for like end of April. Is that still a realistic time frame?
Yeah, early summer is where I'm putting my stamp.
Yeah.
But that's the hope, is end of April. But yeah. I figure if I say, you know, out loud early summer, people won't get too upset if it's like June. But right. I sure hope it's not June.
Yeah. Have you found that the governmental shutdown has slowed you down at all?
Yeah, it's still kind of unknown how much it's affected us. So we submitted the day before they shut down. So we submitted Christmas Eve. So I don't know if that means we're in the middle of the pile, hopefully.
Hopefully.
But we are definitely, we're waiting. Our file says it's in review, but we're waiting to see what that means. And they haven't, last I looked, they haven't updated delays or times to process. Yeah. So they were at 90 days, basically 88 days average when we submitted, and they're saying it could be double now. So that's a little nerve wracking, but
sure.
It is what it is. As long as the government stays open, I think we're good.
Yeah. Hopefully. Let's talk about your name. Because you went through a transition from going from Hoppa Brewing to Stemma Brewing. Mm-hmm. And I know that both of those had very distinct connotations. Mm-hmm. So just talk a bit about, you know, the origin story of the brewery, where the names came from, and just about like what your overall mission statement is. I know that I know Lane's written a couple things about you guys, but,
Yeah, it's a great question. So like early on, and this has been a vision of mine for almost 10 years, really mine and my wife's. Coming out of college, a senior in college, I was writing a business plan for a brewery. And at that point, it was Fan Belt Brewing, which really never had legs. It was just kind of a fun term we were going by. And I told my wife or girlfriend at the time, hey, we're starting a brewery. And she told me.
So you had
me,
a wife and a girlfriend.
Yeah, nice, totally. Nice both. Work. Yes, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, not yet wife. And she told me no way, which was smart, really smart on her point. So we, fast forward 10 years, we started really seriously talking about it almost a year ago. Yeah, early 2018, end of 2017, we started talking about it again. And at that point, Hoppa got brought up by a good friend of ours as like, that's what he kind of caught, you know, it's like, we're the Hoppas. And so, that was sort of our party name, I guess. And that's, it meant a lot of what we want the brewery to be is around just family and meeting for drinks and, just having a really good time. And so that was, it really encapsulated who we were and what we were trying to be. And we were rolling with that. Up until about 4 or 5 months ago. And as we already had a space and we're going through trademarking, and I knew there was some trademarks out there with Hoppa. I wasn't that familiar with how intense the trademarking process is. And basically it turns out that there's another brewery that has a beer that has Hapa in the name. And
in Washington State or just in the country?
In the country, yeah. And yeah, so it's not specific to any sort of state. It can be, you know, federal trademark. Right. So, yeah, so I really was like, oh, that's not going to be an issue. It's way far away. And like, totally, it's got other words in it. And it turns out that that is a conflict. And so I reached out to the brewery and basically asked, and they told me not that I couldn't use it, which was pretty interesting. It was, at first it was upsetting, but I'm really happy with where we're at now with Stemma. And that was fun. When we spent like basically an entire weekend, there was me and my wife and my brother and
brainstorming,
sister-in-law and my parents. Yeah, we were like, we spent a good 40 hours over 3 days. Like, that's all we talked about the entire, you know,
sure,
time we're hanging out and just brainstorming. And we're going through, and I had the computer up, and I'm like, okay, what about, you know, Gather Brewing was on my list. I don't see anything on Google. Okay, let's look at the, you know, trademark website. And it's like, wait, someone owns this in Oregon, but they're not doing anything with it yet. You know, ran into that. And with so many breweries, there's very few. And it's funny, Stemma, my wife, threw that out there. And I right away was like, I don't like it. And she's like, what do you mean? And my brother's like, I love it. It's great.
Yeah, it was a term I wasn't familiar with.
Yeah, so it took me a second to chew on. And yeah, I wasn't either. And I'm like, okay, so what does it mean? What? And, you know, we started looking at the Latin roots, and as far as who what we were trying to convey, it was perfect. You know, it's a written family genealogy. It comes from the word for crown, which is something that's passed down from king to king to king. So it's, for us, it's this concept of like, this is being passed down. I hope to pass it down to, you know, my kids or employees or whoever, but it's this whole idea that I hope it will live on beyond just us, and, you know, live on through our customers and our friends. And,
yeah.
And now like too, we're realizing, so it had zero conflicts, which was awesome.
Yeah. Which is kind of surprising once you really know the history of the name.
Totally.
I mean, yeah, again, I hadn't heard of it, but yep. You think that people would have.
Yeah. Yeah. So now we have yet to refine it, but I think we're going to be looking at the Latin dictionary for a lot of beer names too. Because it seems like people haven't really tapped into that yet, which is good.
The whole monarchy thing.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe. Yeah.
Moat sludge stout.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Maybe not too Game of Thronesy, but.
Right. Yeah. That's true. Nice. Well, since you're currently living it, we talked briefly about this off the air, but what obstacles or other unforeseen challenges have you encountered on your quest to become a reality that you might not have expected? I mean, at this point, there's enough breweries in town, and you've been locked into the scene long enough to know the things that you know you're going to have to do. But what surprises have there been? I mean, is it what you thought it would pretty much be, or how have you seen, what's been your experience, I guess?
Yeah, I mean, I think I came into it with a pretty good head on my shoulders on what to expect. I mean, with working for a distributor now, I have the, it's really lucky I get to see so many different breweries go through it. And I've been really asking these questions over the last, you know, 8 or 9 years of just like really what it means to build a brewery. So nothing too bad, but every day also seems like it's a challenge. There's something new that always pops up. We talked a bit about, you know, the building we decided on only had propane. So I knew that was going to be an issue right off the gates. And that was actually really simple to solve. Cascade Natural Gas, just, what's your usage? Oh, breweries. We love breweries. They use a lot of gas.
Yeah. Let's see. Pacific Northwest and pretty small town.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, that was a hurdle that we overcame pretty fast. One thing that kind of threw a wrench in sort of our design plan, and I was realizing that how much of design is dictated through code is we're having to keep a firewall in our brewery. So we're toying the line with being an unsprinklered building X amount of square foot. And I knew that was going to be a line that we were right on. So we're from the get-go being really careful that we weren't going over certain occupancy and all these sort of things. And there was a codes changed too so much. So basically, we were working under the assumption that it was 6,000 square feet or less. with A2 occupancy type, and we were good to go. And so we were going to turn this one wall into a bunch of windows and roll ups. And turns out it's now 5,000 square feet or less, which we're at 5,400 square feet. So thus we have to keep a firewall between our brew house and our tap room.
Oh, interesting.
The lucky part of it is it's already a firewall. The spaces were divided up at one point. So it's a 1 hour rated firewall, but it changes my plan for visibility into the brew house. So it's a totally change. Like, man, like a lot of our design was around
being
seeing
on display.
Seeing the brew house. Mm-hmm. And now we have one door that's glass, fire rated glass, and three very small fire rated glass windows. And we're spending more than if the entire thing mm-hmm. is glass. That's been interesting.
Yeah.
But easy. I mean,
set up an iPad or something that you know, has thing in the brewery and you can like see it. You know.
Yeah, that someone mentioned that to me. I think it's a great idea. Apparently Zodiac Aerospace has that where they have these walls where they, you know, because of what they're doing, they can't have windows, mm-hmm. but they have a big screen on one side and a camera on the other, and it looks like you're looking mm-hmm. through. So that's maybe something we'll do.
Brewer cam.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great idea. I think it'd be fun. Yeah.
Something down the road.
Yep.
Not, I'm sure that's at the very bottom of your list right now. So you mentioned about when you and your wife started talking more about actually doing making the brewery a reality. Mm-hmm. But just talk a bit about your brewing history. You know, how long have you been brewing and when did you, it sounds like you haven't been brewing all that long. And you came to the conclusion that you wanted to open up a brewery pretty soon. Just talk about, you know, how you got into it, how you progressed, and then and to the point where you were like, you know what, maybe I should do this.
Yeah, I mean, I started brewing at 20, like 2 weeks before I turned 21. Mm-hmm. My dad's a home brewer from the late 80s, early 90s, and he brewed a lot of my childhood. And so I called him up, you know, a couple months before my 21st birthday. And it's like, hey, Dad, I really want to learn to brew. And I don't know what it really was.
Was he still brewing? Or had
he
was
not.
Given it up?
No, he had totally given up. He gave it up when my brother and I were in high school because the kegerator was in the shed and he was worried we were going to bring all our friends over and drink his beer.
See, I think the best thing, though, the best way to get around that is to not have it be the forbidden fruit.
You totally,
just
absolutely.
Be like, see, it's not that big of a deal. Yep. Here it is right here. Look at me. I'm fine.
Yeah, exactly. And I think we're getting to that point too, as like a drinking culture where it's like now the breweries, you bring your whole family and you bring your kids and it's not a taboo.
Yeah.
Like it was, you know, in the 90s. But yeah, so I called up my dad and asked him if he'd pull up, you know, out his homebrew and set up. So we got it out of the attic and it was all dusty and we went and got a recipe. We did a clone for Arrogant Bastard by Stone. And we like, he forgot steps when we were brewing. And like, I remember, I don't think we used a grain bag. Like we just threw it in. And so then we're like, oh shoot, how do we like filter it? And, you know, get rid of the grain. And we like ended up using like, you know, a soup strainer and, and I was hooked. I brewed that summer. I brewed, I don't know, 40 batches. Like I was brewing a couple times a week. And just really,
you got the fever bad.
Yeah, I did. So I really got into it. That was funny that summer. Actually, I was living in Denver. My brother is in Denver and I, was doing an internship out there, and that's right when I started brewing, still brewing stovetop extract and brewing all the time. You know, my girlfriend at the time down is still in Bellingham, so I'm like, got free time. And I brew one of my first or second beers I brew there is this raspberry imperial stout, and I have no idea what I'm doing at this point, right? And I ferment the beer maybe for 10 days and then I throw it in some raspberries for like, I don't know, a day or two. And then I put it in bottles with bottling sugar and I didn't check any gravity, didn't check anything. And we tried it, you know, I don't know, weekends, it's tasting pretty good, full flavor, good carbonation. And then about a week later, you open a bottle and it's sort of like foams out and you're like, oh man,
happy
it's getting
see you.
Exactly. And then fast forward a couple weeks, we decided we're going to take a bunch of my homebrew to this work party and throw it in the car, 100 degree Colorado weather, drive there. And we're there and like they're gushers at this point. So opening over the sink and, but still the beer tasted in pretty good. And then come home, they're in the car and it's kind of hot. Takes about 45 minutes. We pull up and park in front of my brother's house. And all of a sudden, boom, what was that?
Yeah.
It blew up in the back of the car, just vanilla, you know, raspberry stout all over.
Yeah.
And that was my first experience with actually unloading. So I'm still so new that I wouldn't want to dump the beer, right?
No. Like, yeah.
And so
I'm like, it's beer. I made it.
I'm like carefully carrying the box out of the car, you know, setting it down in the driveway and there's broken glass everywhere where I pull a bottle out because I'm like, I'm just going to wipe them off. I'm going to get them in the fridge and they're going to be fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a bottle actually explode in my hand.
Oh, wow.
And like cut, you know, around like under my ear. And
wow.
So that was,
I
learned
bombs.
A lot the hard way of like proper bottle conditioning and aging. And
It's a hard concept if you don't come from that, like a science-y or biologically background. Mm-hmm. It's a hard concept to get around. I remember I was essentially on my own and I could not fathom the concept of a false bottom. Like, how does the mash tun work? How does that work?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I just couldn't get it. And then, of course, when I saw it, I was like, you've got to be kidding me. That's it?
Yeah.
It's a false bottom. Right. Got it. Yeah, simple. It's hard though. I mean, if you don't know anything, you know, you're fortunate that you had your dad who even missing steps still knew the basic gist of like how to go about doing it. I mean, if I don't brew for a few weeks, I'm just like, okay,
what was I doing?
What did I just forget to do? Oh, I didn't take pH. Oh, I forgot to take the gravity. Oh yeah. And you just space out. Since you're getting ready to join the brewery revolution, shall we say.
Totally.
What are some of your thoughts on the state of beer right now? And, you know, I'm just thinking not just the state of beer in Bellingham in particular, which will be your first, your most important consideration, but also just across the country and if you so desire, across the world.
Yeah. Like
where do you see beer being right now? And where do you see Stemma Brewing in there?
Totally. Yeah, I mean, it's crowded, I think is the term I heard recently in a conference I was at that I really like. It not oversaturated. I don't think we're there. I think we're crowded for sure.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's getting the market's becoming more mature. And so we're getting to a point where you can't just open a brewery willy-nilly. I mean, we talked about it, the amount of money that goes into it. And now the consumers are at a point where they're smart enough that they know bad beer at this point, and they know beer that's, you know, they have really good examples of world-class beers.
We're spoiled.
Yeah, we're definitely. Yeah. And so I think we're in a crowded marketplace that you sort of have to come to market knowing what you're doing for sure. And I think right now we're hazy or brut or all the variations are really hot. I mean, German laws out the window. We're just like, we're loving it right now in the US with just anything weird you can put in beer, let's do it. I mean, we were talking about a beer I brought that's got cranberries and lactose and vanilla and and so I think that's going to continue, and that's, you know, what I see on the distribution side, where really the one-off beer is the really funky unique stuff. They work great for a one-off beer. You may not want to bring it back because that person might have had that pint and was like, yeah, I won't have it again.
Yeah.
But they're always
and when you're
for
brewing on that big of a scale, you know, it doesn't always turn out exactly the way that you think it's going to turn out.
Totally.
Do you feel the need to have to chase trends or to try and come up with a new trend? Or do you think that it's more important to just have some core beers, which of course you're constituents are going to decide what those will be.
Totally.
You know, that's an argument that I go back and forth with myself about. You know, the curmudgeon in me is just like, you know what, if you make good beer, then you make good beer. And I think that sometimes the ability to just be able to brew a good pale ale or amber or something like that is overlooked sometimes in the pursuit of the crazy one-off beers or the big sellers. Because there's a lot of popular breweries, I won't mention names, but they're run-of-the-mill beers. They're pale, they're amber, stuff like that, is just that. It's run-of-the-mill. It's nothing great. But then they have some specialty beers. It's like, oh, well, those are great.
Yeah, I think that's the fine line. Like right there, I think that's the great best of both worlds. I think core beers are still really important because that's sort of what builds your brewery. And those are, I mean, I still find myself, I have one IPA in particular that I always bring home and always have. And I think there's always a home. You need a consistent product that people know they can go back to. But I do think, and you know, we will look after trends a bit and try to have fun. I mean, it's not really chasing trends as much as just like having fun and brewing goofy stuff and trying pushing the boundaries. I think we'll do a lot of that. But I also think that consumers are realizing, you know, you don't need high alcohol necessarily anymore. You don't need the biggest alcohol and the biggest hops like it was 10, 15 years ago. Now it's like, so we're going to focus a lot on sessionable, drinkable beers that you can have a couple of, enjoy with friends or family, and go home and still enjoy the rest of your evening and not be like, well, I just had two triple IPAs and my taste buds are gone and I'm drunk.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll drink to that. Cheers. Because I'm all about that as well.
Cheers to that.
It's rare that I brew a beer above 5% these days. You know, of course, you know, the big beers aside, I try and brew one of those every year, just bottle them up and have them around because they're fun.
Yeah, for like one-offs, one thing we've sort of said is, you know, roughly 75% of our taps will be 5.5% or less is our goal to strive towards. Having seasonals that go out of that, but our kind of main focus, our everyday, will be just stuff you can drink and enjoy and have a couple of them.
Yeah. Do you have a game plan for styles of beers? I mean, obviously, and you don't have to give any secrets away that, you know, answer this as you see fit. I remember when Chris and I were talking about Subdued, we had two things that were our mantra. One was we were going to have the best IPA in town. Cool. And we went through like, I think ultimately we hit about 18 iterations before we settled on one that was like, that's it. Yeah. That's going to be the one. That's going to be, you know, that'll be the bill payer.
Yeah.
But we were also going to do this whole Saison series, which seven years ago, whenever we started, you know, that was kind of the next up and coming thing. And both of us love Saisons and we brewed Saisons a lot. And so we were pretty confident in that. I'm just wondering what, and you don't necessarily, again, have to go into specifics, but just do you have a certain number of beers that you know or you're hoping are going to be your core beers and alongside the fun one-offs and stuff like that?
Yeah, I've got a good idea of stuff I want to do. Again, we were talking earlier, you know, I'm looking for a brewer as well and I'm hoping to find someone that to help me brew. And I hope, you know, to really over time it can develop based on what people, you know, that person likes to brew or a brewer likes to do. And so I'm not set on anything specific necessarily, but low alcohol for sure is as a focus. And then what I drink all the time is, you know, a 6.5% or 7% IPA. And so I like you, I think I'm going to be striving to perfecting a really good, just everyday drinker.
It's a reality in this town.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's, obviously, you look at the numbers, that's where a lot of dollars are. And then, I mean, one of the things I've been brewing for a really long time and had the chance to brew actually at Wingman Brewers, do a collab with them not so long ago, is this vanilla bean milk stout. So that I hope to become a kind of a staple stout on. Use Madagascar vanilla beans and a little lactose sugar. And then I won a homebrew award this last year for a lemon cayenne lager. It was a lemon cayenne Munich Kellis.
Yeah,
and
sounds great.
Yeah, it was awesome. I had the pleasure to get some yeast from Chuckin' Up, which is really cool. That makes it easy. And but I definitely will do both ales and lagers, and I hope to kind of be known, at least in the tap room, with experimenting and having fun with different herbs and fruits.
Choice.
Exactly. and
makes
and
it then, fun for your brewer too.
Exactly. Yeah. Not just the same thing over and over, mm-hmm. which I know, you know, we'll have to do some of that to fill pipelines, but
it's the we gig. Also, and to keep the yeast going. Yeast management's really what separates pro brewing from
absolutely. Home brewing. Yep. Always having beers you can pull yeast from that aren't
and don't
it.
Have to pay $500 for a new pitch.
Yeah.
Speaking of brewing, what I know that your system's got a little bit of a pedigree to it. I think it came from Cloudburst most recently.
Yep.
Right.
Exactly.
Steve, is that right?
Yep. Downstairs. Steve. Yep.
Steve downstairs. Luke. Down there. What size system is it? And just talk a little bit about that, I guess.
Totally. Well, this ties well into Stemma and sort of was a happy coincidence with the name is that we're getting this system that was passed down to us. And it was originally Silver City got it made.
Okay.
Ripley Stainless out of Canada produced it. And in the 90s, well, you brewed on a Ripley's Boundary Bay's system was Ripley's. Maybe they've changed it since, but
no, it was the main. Oh God, I'm gonna blank out now. Ripley's doesn't sound quite right.
We're using an immersion coil, like burner.
Mm-hmm.
So that's Ripley's.
Okay,
but it's like Sound Systems.
Yeah,
was who like so in the 90s.
I can't believe I'm blanking out, but anyway, yeah.
In the 90s, well, yeah, they got an NSF or
NSI
system too, or the mash tun, I think, or.
Yeah, they got a new mash tun since I was there. But
So Ripley's in the 90s was they were working with this contractor basically in Washington to design these systems, and they're these immersion coil systems you don't see much today, and it's this flame tube, 2-inch stainless tube that goes wrapped around inside, and then a fan pulls it out. Super efficient, a ton of systems were built like that. And so Silver City got it commissioned in 96, 97.
Mm-hmm.
And then Cloudburst bought it 3-4 years ago. And then we bought it from them. It was a really lucky timing thing for us. I'd been kind of looking at Pro Brewer on and off for used systems. And I noticed it way down, like, I don't know, I was on page 6 or 7, and it had been posted 4 or 5 months previous, and it had like very few updates. I'm like, oh, it's got it. The system's got to be gone.
Mm-hmm.
And so I reach out, and he's like, oh no, actually, our brew house is being made. It keeps getting delayed, so we have to keep telling people no, it's not ready, not ready.
Oh right. Yeah.
And so they had to kind of like turn away buyers. And so I was just at that perfect window where their system was arriving the next week, and they were like ready to sell.
Yeah.
And so I was like, okay, I'll come down tomorrow and look at it. And I came down, you know, it was a Sunday. I looked at it. And then there, I was like, so I would love to just see it in action. Can I come on a brew day? And he's like, well, tomorrow, it was a Monday, is our next and last brew day. We're doing a double batch.
Yeah.
And then we're tearing it apart. And I was like, okay, let me call my work and see if I can call in sick, you know? And,
so at least you work for a sympathetic, sympathetic company.
And they were awesome. Yeah. They've been super supportive through the whole thing. And so, yeah, I called up my boss, like, hey, so I've been looking at the system, and can I take tomorrow off and go down? So I brewed a double day, helped to brew, with, Cloudburst, and man, it's amazing. It's a really well put together system. They've done some improvements to it. And, just watching them use it, it's all pretty manual, but everything works well. I mean, I've watched brewers on way fancier touch button systems, and they have issues, you know. And
system's perfect.
Yeah, no, exactly. And you know, obviously, I was watching guys that they've ran 300-400 batches through the system, so they really knew what they were doing. But there's something to say about just simplicity and manual controls. It's pretty fun to be taking on this system. It needs a lot of love. I'm going to be, you know, cleaning it up and getting it ready, but it's stainless. It'll last 100 more years.
Yeah, totally. And it's direct fire, so there's not too many things to go wrong with it.
No. And Power Flame, which is the direct fire system on it, is still around, which is nice. So I can get a new flame if I need to.
Yeah, totally. Just watch out for caramelization on those lighter beers.
Yeah, right.
Can happen.
I believe it.
So what are your, I mean, I know that, you know, since you haven't even opened yet, it's hard to say, but I'm sure you have, you know, you've projected out, like, what, where do you see Stemma Brewing, hopefully, in 5 years, 10 years beyond? I mean, have you, did you write that into your business model?
Yeah.
It seems like you kind of would have with the whole, with how the name works and stuff.
Totally.
I mean, what, let's say that everything works out ideally.
Yeah.
How do you see things rolling for the next like 5, 10, 15 years?
Yep. Yeah. I mean, in my initial business plan, I did 5 years out as far as projections and numbers go. And, you know, I'm hoping they're, modest as far as, sales go, but
always,
I also,
always a good idea.
Yeah. I high on costs and low on, you know, modest on sales projections, but I don't know. I mean, we're looking to have a really great tap room and to have a good local presence.
Sounds
and really,
like it's going to be cozy.
Yeah. Cozy. Like a space that people want to come and hang out. And, you know, and we don't hope to be, or think we're not thinking we're going to be the next Sierra Nevada or the next Deschutes. I think those days are sort of over. And, I really just hope to serve our local community and then look at distribution and kind of grow that as organically as we can. So my vision for that would be to just slowly build it. Mm-hmm. Not right off the gates looking for a bunch of distribution, trying to get all over the state. I just don't think it's realistic, and it doesn't sound like a fun business model to me. Mm-hmm. And then our focus, at least for the short term, will be draft only, with 32-ounce crowlers, mm-hmm. In-house. And that's mainly coming from distribution, looking at trends and looking at numbers. You know, that we have breweries that do draft only and they do the same amount of volume as the brewery that has 160 packages.
You and
know?
Your profit margin's way better.
Exactly. It's just simple. Like, we want to do stuff well and simple. Like, we want quality to be there. We don't need to complicate things. Necessarily with package, and you get into package and then all of a sudden quality can get all wonky, you know? So
yeah.
Really a draft only on-premise focus.
Mm-hmm.
But you know,
things, but open to,
things,
open
yeah,
to open
exactly.
Things,
things yeah. can change. And, if an opportunity came up, you know, our distributor was like, hey, we could really use a 6-pack and we would explore it. But doing it organically, mm-hmm. So both my wife and I are finance majors, and
oh, nice.
That helps. We have a pretty good, you know, background with money and like understanding, and we're trying to do this well and not, just rack up debt either.
Sure.
You know, and be smart about expansion.
Mm-hmm.
One thing we, in talking with people all the time, is that there's sort of this, notion that you need to grow to be successful. And, I don't think that's true at all.
Yeah.
You
smaller
know,
is better.
Exactly. Well, and people,
or
it's like,
can be better.
If you're not growing, you're, you know, it's like, well, you can still innovate, but not necessarily grow. You can still stay like kind of, you know, relevant, but a lot of times businesses will grow just purely to grow, but they don't need to make more money. They actually might make less. And mm-hmm. it's like looking at, every time we grow, is it because we're actually, are we making more money? You know, is it a smart decision?
What are you accomplishing?
Yeah. Yeah. Or is it just yeah. like
look at Big Time. They just in-house and, you know, beer and pizza.
Yeah, totally.
And they've been around since 85.
Absolutely. And they, the owners are probably happy.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and that's, you know, I've
the more seen, beer you can sell across your bar,
yep,
the better you're doing.
Yep. Seen a lot of breweries that, you know, start growing and get excited and it's great, but then it's like, man, they're working a ton and they're in markets they never thought they would be, and they're traveling, and it's like all of a sudden, like, what lifestyle are you trying to, you know, have? And for me, it's, I want to have this fun business that I'm doing and then spend a lot of time with my family. And,
right. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And you're seeing overextension, not just from breweries these days. You know, decisions that were made a year ago are coming back and turning out to not be good decisions, mm-hmm. but even manufacturers, I mean, there's manufacturers of brewing equipment that are just going under, it seems like, left and right.
That's such a hard
just
industry.
From people making decisions based on what they think is going to happen.
Yeah. I feel so bad for those guys right now. I mean, I just think how much infrastructure they have and huge equipment and all these expenses. And then they're sort of at the mercy of, you know, new breweries opening, mm-hmm.
And the competence of those new breweries and the who knows? We'll just leave it at the competence.
Yeah,
of the new
exactly.
Breweries.
Yeah. It's crazy. It would not be an industry I would want to get into.
No.
It would be really hard. And you're working sort of in those companies, you're working like a year ahead basically. And so you're, mm-hmm. there's a lot out
yeah,
there.
Yeah. Each year we were watching our timeline get longer and longer. You know,
yep.
Oh, we can have it in 3 months. Oh, 6 months. Oh, 9 months.
Yeah.
Oh,
so back to the brew house a little bit. I mean, that was the big part early on why we decided to go used was at that point, I'm like, I wanted something ready so that if a building came up, at this point, we didn't even have a brewery space. We wanted to not have to wait 9 months or a year for a new system to be made. So even more than just saving some money, getting used, it was having it ready. And then not coming from a production background, I also really liked having a system that I knew worked, mm-hmm. you know, and watching Cloudburst use
proven.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's proven they make great beer on it. And so, I can too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's possible.
Absolutely. So I want to get into some of the more fun things. These are just questions that I ask everybody that aren't specific to anything, but this is more the original. When I came up with this podcast at the very beginning, the impetus for it was the beer that flipped the switch. You know, like what was the beer that mm-hmm. did that? And so that's something I'm going to come to. But do you have, mm-hmm. well, you were talking about it actually earlier. You were brewing with your dad. I was going to ask what memories you have of your very first brew.
Yeah, totally. So it was Arrogant Bastard in the kitchen of the house I grew up in.
Nice.
I remember the smell of it, like this just the mash, warty smell that I really enjoyed, and I, you know, remember throwing the hops in, and it was just like a 3 gallon, maybe not even 2 gallon, you know.
Yeah, sugary soup, flour water.
Yeah, soup pot on our electric little stovetop.
Mm-hmm. And it was like an extract, partial mash kind of thing.
Absolutely, yep, partial mash extract.
Yeah. When did you go all grain?
I went because
you said you were brewing like.
Yeah.
Multiple times a week.
Basically that like first summer. So my first brew was like February or March of, you know, whatever that year was, 2010 or I can't remember. When I turned 21 and then I went all grain after that summer. So basically a year later I kind of went all grain and just went after it. Got the whole setup and
And so obviously you're the kind of person who was approaching it, you know, with an eye for improving. You were on a mission.
Yeah.
At what point did you notice that your skills like really took a jump? Was mm-hmm. there, were you already a judge at this point?
No. Yeah. So I'm trying to remember when I started judging, I kind of got thrown into it. I mean, shoot, Chris was involved like early on. I knew Chris. I judged
McClanahan.
Maybe the first time I judged was with Chris.
Like an April Brews Day kind of thing.
No, I think it was
or Best of the Bay.
Best of the Bay was the first time I judged. And at that point, I want to say I was a certified Cicerone. So that's, I'm pretty sure I'm going to have to double check my. history there, but I'm pretty sure that's what kind of threw me into it because I became a certified Cicerone just because I love education and I love just learning. And mm-hmm. so I went through the Cicerone or going through it and became a certified Cicerone and then realized like, oh, I can judge now with that credential. And so
you didn't take the exam? You were just... Well, I mean, you took the Cicerone. Exam,
Cicerone.
But you didn't have to take the BJCP.
No. Exam. I've gone back through and have taken it now. Mm-hmm. And I did take for the national and I barely didn't pass it.
Yeah. I'm with you.
Yeah. I'm excited
came
to take
so
it again.
Close.
Yeah.
I was like,
but I mean, I think that's really what took my brewing to the next level was studying for the Cicerone and the BJCP.
Understanding the nuts and bolts.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, so I've gone, I've spent a good 5 years of my life studying for Cicerone. Back when it was three stages, I became a certified Cicerone with one of my coworkers. Pretty cool. Out of the 20 some people that took it, I think only 5 or 6 passed, and it was me and one of my coworkers were part of that group, which was cool.
Yeah.
And then I at that point, you know, the next level is master, and I'm like, I'm doing it. And I spent 2 years studying pretty tough, way harder than I studied for my finance degree. And
yeah, beer's so much more fun.
And my beer, I mean, my brewing got so much better, and it was purely because I understood the science behind it. And mm-hmm. I started understanding tasting too. And like, I could taste a beer and go, okay, this, I understand how they got there. And this is, I now get what I need to do to mm-hmm. replicate that.
Yeah.
I can taste a beer and like, oh, I get the idea of the hop profile and the malt profile. And so, yeah, I ended up I took the master in 2015, Master Cicerone. Crazy 2-day exam.
Wow.
10-hour days. It's insane. It was a lot of fun though. And like, I really enjoyed myself and met some really cool people,
mm-hmm.
and they passed one person, out of the 24 that took it. Yeah. 24. And yeah, his name was Jason also,
mm-hmm.
which is funny because I got emails like, congrats, man, you passed.
And like,
I
was oh, like, that's great.
The other Jason Pratt. But now they've added the advanced Cicerone. And so I went through and I did pass the advanced Cicerone a couple year ago.
And yeah, that's something that I haven't really looked into. You know, at this point,
yeah.
I don't see myself doing it, but I love the program and I love the fact that Ray Daniels came up with it. I think it's a great idea. You know, for those who don't know, you know, it's specifically, you know, it's concentrated on like a server kind of thing, which that was always another one of our things.
Sure.
Is one thing that just galls me is when I go into a brewery.
Mm-hmm.
And the servers have no idea what they're talking about. It's like, well, what are you doing here?
Yeah. So I'm a big advocate of Cicerone, and I think I do love education. I think continuing to teach yourself is really important. Mm-hmm. But I think
I'm a better student now than when I was a student.
Oh, yeah, same. Absolutely. But I was at a brewery conference down in San Diego this last August, and it was all breweries starting to open. And mm-hmm. so many of them had like not come from the industry. They'd homebrewed only. And they were just like, I'm starting a brewery. And, you know, and I just encouraged all of them. I was like, start going through Cicerone. Like, what's Cicerone? I'm like, well, I'll start there. You know, and like, not, it's definitely like work, and it's, there it is a test, and so there is some people it's like, you know, I'm not a good test taker. Okay, we'll get better at it. But the fact that you learn a ton just in preparing for it, and I feel like I'm better able and prepared now just from going through it.
Mm-hmm.
It's a cool program.
Yeah, and it makes total sense. The more knowledgeable you are about the product that you are going into the profession and the business of making, the better you're going to be at it.
Yeah.
And the more passionate, obviously, you will be at it because of your deep understanding of it. It makes total sense to me.
Well, and it, I mean, it's definitely, it's service oriented. It can be, but like also the off-flavor testing on it is really intense and mm-hmm. great to learn, train your palate. And then also the technical side, which I always did pretty well on that. Like I'm good at draft work and stuff. Mm-hmm. Even that's for me was intense. I mean, they put you a 10-minute timer in front of a 20-tap system at the brewery in Chicago.
Goose Island.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Goose Island Brewing. 20-tap system, you know, and they're like, they set you up. Okay, you've got 10 minutes. The story is you're a manager at a bar. I have no idea what's going on, but none of my beer is pouring. Go. Mm. Start the timer. And it's like, okay. It's like starting. And it's like going through that. It's like, okay.
Yeah. That's great training.
Exactly. None of the beers are pouring. Okay. Let's maybe go in the back room. Let's see what's going on. It's like the regulator was like unhooked from the CO2 tank.
Mm-hmm.
The glycol unit was turned off. The power pack was turned off. You know, all the beer Sankeys were not connected to kegs. It, and just like that is a lot of training that even servers have really no experience with.
Yeah. But knowing that stuff, and you know, I mean, I did it the opposite. You know, I was coming from the brewing background where you had to figure that stuff out just as the brewer for Boundary and going and helping other places in town that didn't know how to do it at the time. You know, all of the nuts and bolts of that, it's so much more than just the beer, you know, and just the production of it. Anyway.
That's fun.
What, if any, what's your favorite beer to brew? You know, style or specific beer or something?
You know, I always go back to IPA because that's what I drink a lot of. I love playing around with the different hop choices and really seeing what you can do with that. And now I'm getting really into different malt choices. You know, we're lucky to be here in the Skagit region area.
Pioneers.
Yeah, I mean, Skagit Valley is pretty amazing with what they're putting out. And so I'm having a lot of fun doing single varietal barleys and tasting the difference and really finding out ones I like a lot.
Yeah.
Agreed. Which is fun. And then I don't know. I enjoy a complicated brew day too. You know, I have fun messing around with, I've done decoction mashing just purely to say I've done it. Probably won't do it second time because I think it's maybe, I think we've made advances in our brewing
systems. It has its historical place and it served its purpose, but you can do it easier.
You can do it easier, malt easier. Is different now. That was back when
absolutely.
Malt was done different. So I tend to brew a lot of IPA. I really enjoy stouts, though, just for the brew day is always fun. I love how dark and rich the mash is.
Yeah, smelling that is just so. I hadn't brewed a stout in years and years, and just brewing it, it's like, I like this.
I take this a lot of joy in the process, like more so than what I'm brewing. Like that really, the process is the same pretty much, no matter what you're brewing. Obviously, there's some different variants, but I keep a pretty standard process, and I just love the hitting all my numbers, and I've gotten it now where I
you
get within
are
one
a brewer.
Point. Yes. I get within like 1 point of what I was shooting every time.
Yeah.
And I love it. I love the numbers and looking, it's like, oh, that's the pH I was shooting for.
Man, you're speaking my language.
That's
right now.
The gravity I was shooting for. And you know, that's, I was shooting for 10 gallons. I got exactly 10 gallons. And it's taken me 40 batches through my current system to figure out all the losses.
But it takes time.
Yeah.
And you have to get to know the quirks. You know, it's just like getting to know your car, you know, like, oh, you got to do that one little thing, you know, to get it to do what you want it to do.
Yeah.
That's funny that you mentioned that. I'm totally on board with that. One of the questions that I usually ask that I took out just for time was, I feel that brewers tend to be process and detail oriented people.
Yeah.
Do you agree?
Yeah.
I think you just answered
that. Yes, I agree.
I think you just answered that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's probably going to be IPA, but what's your favorite beer to drink? And it can be a specific beer, just a style, whatever.
So I'll share Crikey IPA from Rubens.
Oh, man.
My absolute favorite.
Adams.
Yeah, I mean, they're great brewery. Adam,
talk about yeast management, man. That's the guy to talk to about how does he do all of that stuff.
Yes, yep.
He must be the master of yeast management.
Yeah, they do a great job. Freem also does a great job of yeast management. I was down there checking out the facility they have there. And I mean, they're also one of my favorite beers to drink. And
me too.
For me, it just has to do with drinkability and consistency. I like when I can count on a beer to always be like, it doesn't necessarily have to be identical. I mean, even Crikey goes through some phases, you know, depending on hop crop and year and stuff, but it's consistent still. There's other
consistently
breweries.
Great.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. It's always very good. And I've had other beers where I'll buy a flat of it. And I love it. And I buy another and it's like, oh, this batch is not the same. And then I have a hard time going back to those because it's, you know, I typically buy 24 at a time because it's harder to
You
commit.
Work for a distributor.
Yeah.
So. And the same way, you know, I special order stuff through the co-op.
Yeah, totally. Yep. So,
So this is a fun question that I often ask people what's your guilty pleasure as far as drinking goes?
Oh yeah. Good. Oh man. So
it can be anything.
Yeah. I think, I love ice cream in my beer. Yeah. And this is something we're hoping to bring into the brewery as well. So I make a vanilla bean milk stout I talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And over vanilla bean ice cream is absolutely awesome.
Yeah.
And I love doing that. I also just I blend and will like, you know, do weird things with different beers, and I never stay to just the norm. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nice. I don't know if you're looking to keep that ice cream local, but Ben from Mallard is into beer and collaborations and stuff like
awesome.
That.
Awesome. Yeah.
Talking to him in the past. He's been anyway.
You know what? We've actually decided. West Coast Pops, I don't know if you've heard of them. They're a local popsicle company in town. They approached me and I got pretty excited right off the bat because one of the obstacles, so we want to focus on beer. We don't necessarily want to, you know, I don't want to deal with the health department.
So you're not going to do food at all?
No. We are working with a food truck. Mr. Frank's Spices, they're a local spice company. Mm-hmm. They're starting a food truck, and we're working right now with them to be featured at Stemma Brewing.
Nice. What kind of food is it?
American. Yeah. American food. The big thing is it's to focus on their spices. So mm-hmm. they've got a line of spices, and each food item will kind of feature one of their spices, wings and hamburgers and sliders and some really great food options. West Coast Pops, they approached us about, hey, we got these popsicles, and I think we're going to go that route over traditional scooped ice cream, because then I don't have to worry about a dipper well. I don't have to worry about scooping. They're pre-done. They're good. Mm-hmm. And it's been pretty fun. Part of my guilty pleasure, I've been at home trying out different popsicles and figuring out like the best glassware, you know, and like put the popsicle in the glass and then pour the beer over it. And then it's kind of nice. What's
the beer to popsicle ratio?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. How many ounces? But it's great too, because it's like versus ice cream where you would need a spoon or something.
Right.
This, you just like pull the popsicle out and take a bite and put it back in your glass.
Are you talking about maybe putting some of your beer ultimately in the popsicles?
Yes. That is also a conversation.
Good.
Yep.
Yeah. That's a good way to go.
Next step.
Yeah. That's exciting.
So that's
my wife loves popsicles.
Yeah. That's the route.
Who doesn't love popsicles?
Yeah. That's the route we're going to go. I think it's really fun, and it also is slightly easier for us.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally.
Back to the simple.
Right. Yeah.
Keep things simple.
Absolutely. Simple as much as possible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember the first beer that you ever had?
Yeah. So I was on podcast with Overflow Taps not too long ago,
uh-huh.
and I'm pretty sure I shared Deschutes Black Butte Porter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's definitely my first like memory of craft beer, showing up to a high school party and everyone else is like Busch Light and Sobe vodka. And I show up with Black Butte Porter in a six pack, and everyone's like, "What is that?" You know, but it's like that's what I always saw my dad. Had
good taste.
Well,
then,
that's always what I saw my dad drinking, and I was all stoked about it. But I was thinking after I said that with the Overflow guys, is I don't think that was the first beer I ever had. I'm pretty sure it was Coors Light.
Yeah,
and I'm gonna have to fess up.
Yeah,
Coors Light. I'm pretty
sure. Well, as somebody who grew up without craft beer existing and in Texas.
Yeah.
You know, it was probably Coors Light for me, or Coors, or just Coors. I don't even know if Coors Light existed then.
Yeah,
but
totally.
Yeah, yeah, it's usually a crappy beer.
Yeah, but that's great
that you brought Black Butte Porter.
Yeah, I did hang my hat on craft beer in my early drinking days.
Yeah,
for sure.
Nice.
Yeah,
that's great. Yeah, we kind of touched on this before, but and maybe it's Black Butte Porter, which would not be the first time that was the answer. But what's the beer that flipped the switch for you? What was the beer where you drank it and you're like, I need to be able to do that. I want to know how to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think Black Butte Porter did start it for me for sure. And I don't know if there was necessarily one beer. It was just, I think, Dogfish Head as a brewery, I think their beers are really what opened my eyes to the possibility of beer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they certainly pushed boundaries.
You know, and that was living in Colorado at 21. It was a little easier to get Dogfish Head over there. And You know, the Fort, the raspberry ale they do, that's like super high alcohol. And that was like, wow, like you can, the sky's the limit. And I think a lot of Dogfish Head's beers really did that for me, as changing it. And then now it's just all the local beers too, are pretty, it's cool. The boundaries they're pushing as well.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Do you have any, like a brewing hero or a brewery that you kind of not necessarily want to model yourself after, but that you, that, that inspires you, I guess.
I mean, I think there's so many of them. Right. I think the ones that really focus on quality stand out to me. Mm-hmm. Dogfish Head, I think just purely because of how innovative, you know, they were, he was early on. And we've mentioned Rubens. I respect Adam and that team a ton over there. And John Harris at Ecliptic. Oh, I mean, John. He's
a legend.
Yeah, and he's been really helpful to me,
and he's
me
the
too.
Nicest guy.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, shoot, early on when I was just studying for the Master of Cicerone, I contacted him, and he took 2 hours out of his Sunday that he wasn't working and met me at the brewery and showed me around. And so I think more so than necessarily breweries or beer style, it's more just like the personalities of these owners and brewers that are just,
I love the industry,
awesome and have fun. And you know, they could be doing it for 30 years and they still wake up every day stoked to be doing it.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good examples of that.
Yeah. Cause every day is kind of a new adventure. I mean, you're working in a factory, anything can happen.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
Yep.
Yeah. Going back to John, the very first like bourbon barrel aged beer I ever had was John's. And it was at an Oregon Brew Festival like 20 years ago or something. And it was amazing. And I just remember thinking, like, this could be something.
Yeah.
And it is.
Yeah, now it is. Perfect.
It is. All right. So this is kind of a rapid fire deal that I do with everybody. And it's just favorites. Like, what's your favorite grain?
Skagit Valley. Can I get that
generic? Yeah. I mean,
I love Skagit Valley malts.
Yeah. Well, like I said, pioneers.
Yeah.
Like they're reinventing the wheel.
Taste the difference for sure.
Yeah.
Not all two rows are the same.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. What about favorite hop?
Ooh, man. Citra is definitely one of my favorites. But I'm starting to go back to some of the classics. I'm loving just like Cascade and Centennial recently. But so all my cats are hop names. So,
right. Yeah.
So
I remember Calypso.
Yeah. I've got Calypso, Cascade, and Citra. Yeah. So those are probably my three favorite hops as well.
Yeah. No Zeus or Nugget.
Yeah. That's next. More cats to come.
Yeah. We were talking about yeast a little earlier. I'm going to ask what's your favorite yeast? We were talking about 1056, you know, the ubiquitous workhorse, but we were also talking about the London Ale, like 1028 for those white yeast people.
1028 is my favorite right now.
The
London
Ale
yeast
that gives.
Yeah, and I like it. You know, it stays. It doesn't go super dry.
Yeah.
It gives a lot of good character.
It attenuates pretty well.
Yeah, it does pretty well. Yeah. I've also though had some issues with the Riesling. I'm kind of playing around.
It can be a little finicky.
Yeah, I've noticed that. So I'm not sure. I'm still kind of figuring out. Mm-hmm. I think yeasts have all different purposes for different beers.
Mm-hmm.
And I would imagine we'll manage a couple to kind of get what we're going for.
Yeah. That'll be a full-time job in and of itself. You might want to, I mean, Adam's a super busy guy, but I remember we talked to him. Chris talked to him a couple times.
Yeah.
But the yeast management part of things, man, that's what separates the big boys from the little boys.
It does pretty much hard. Almost every brewery that's got issues, like if you just tell, like, just focus on yeast.
Yeah.
But that will solve your problems. Like that is the number one thing. Yeah. If you need to improve
something,
it's your
tool.
Just figure out your yeast. Yeah.
It
and
is
be
your
golden.
Tool for what you do.
Recipes matter little.
Yeah.
You know, it's more what your yeast is doing.
And, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So this is a question that I ripped off from a now defunct podcast called The Dinner Party Download. But it's tell us something that we don't know. And it can be about you, about your brewery, about your system, or just some random piece of trivia.
Well, I'm trying to think of what something you don't know already. I don't think I've shared this story yet, publicly at least. people that know me will know it, but I used to go by Guy. So there's a period in my life, sixth grade, I was a drummer, and there's That Thing You Do, the movie. And the drummer's name is Guy, and I decided I wanted to be Guy. And so I told my parents I was going to change my name to Guy. And
sure, they took it well.
Yeah, they were awesome.
My parents, really?
Yeah, no, my parents were super supportive. Oddly supportive. I'm wondering what I would do as a parent. But they
you'll figure that out soon enough.
Yeah, exactly. They were like, yeah, well, they started calling me Guy, and then I had an opportunity where I switched schools and. Seventh and eighth grade.
Reinvent yourself.
So I registered as Guy Harper. And so there's still actually a good buddy of mine owns a brewery down in Vancouver, Brothers Cascadia Brewing. And he still knows me as Guy. And it's pretty hilarious.
It's funny. And it's on your permanent record.
Yes, it's on my record. Yeah, no, yeah. You know, he's like, I'm not used to calling you Jason. This is weird. I only knew you as Guy.
Right.
So that was my middle school personality.
Guy Harper. Yep. Nice. That's great. That's awesome. So, you know, you're getting ready to open this brewery. It's super exciting and stressful and exciting and overwhelming and exciting and stressful time. Do you have any advice for somebody who is listening to this, who wants to be where you are right now? You know, in the midst of it all, getting ready to really make it happen. Any pearl of wisdom?
Yeah. I mean, I guess expect the unexpected, be prepared that it's not going to work out how you want it to be prepared to be stressed out, be prepared to be working a ton. I personally love being active and working. So like to me, you know, I'm still working mostly full time. I'm like down to 30 hours a week right now, but you know, I'll put another 40, 50 hours on top of that. And it doesn't faze me, but I think that catches people off guard. And, and then also, you know, ask questions, talk to people, talk to other brewers. Brewers love to share info.
Yeah, totally.
I love sharing where I've been. But I also think that be realistic about where your knowledge is at too. I'm really glad that, you know, Kim, my wife, told me no 10 years ago. At that time, had I actually done what I was hoping to do, I would have been pre-Kolschen, which would have been cool. But there's a good chance I would have failed. Like I wasn't ready for it. And so like, I think Cicerone's a great program. Yeah, you have to go back to school essentially, but do it, you know, like, don't underestimate being prepared. But then at the end of the day too, it is still a gamble. You understand that as anyone else, like at the end of the day, be prepared, but then you still do have to jump off the cliff. It's weird to me. The whole process, it seems a little backwards. Like for us, we got some debt financing, we got, you know, a bank involved, and we had to have a lease signed in order for the bank loan to go through.
So
it's like, wait a second.
Backwards.
So I'm signing a lease and I'm not even yet guaranteed the money.
Yeah, I'm committing to the money without having the money.
Yeah. And so it is like jumping off the cliff.
Yeah.
It's all kind of calculated risks. A lot of what we've been doing has been feeling like we're ready and realizing the risks, taking them. And then when maybe it fails, being okay with it too. Like, being like, okay, that didn't work. Let's start over. Let's keep thinking about it. There's always other avenues.
Yeah. And that can happen on a lot of different levels, like not necessarily total failure, but, I don't even see it as failure. It's just total breakdown.
Yeah.
Like that broke down.
Yep.
Like,
yeah, let's start over. Let's look at another avenue.
Okay, reevaluate.
Yeah. You know. I mean, we're constantly doing that even now.
You will continue.
During build out, you know, we had a pretty good budget. I'm pretty happy with where our costs, you know, I think I did a pretty good job figuring stuff out.
Yeah.
But still, we're over in certain areas. And so now it's like, we're constantly looking. It's like, okay, so we went over in this area. So like, where can we take it from, mm-hmm. you know, and,
yeah.
and figuring out things that are maybe, we're willing to sacrifice, to get open and,
yeah.
and to meet it's a our constant budget
shell game.
Yep.
Yeah.
But get education, you know, study, read a lot of books.
Yeah.
That'd be,
yeah. I agree. Talk to a lot of people.
Like, yeah, really. Just keep
people
talking.
Are willing to tell their story.
Yeah, email yeah. brewers. I guess one piece of good advice mm-hmm. that I think helped me a lot. So I realized I was emailing breweries early on with my personal email, mm-hmm. and very few responded to me. I spent yep. the you know, whatever, maybe it was $100 at the end of the day, but mm-hmm. I got a website. And I got a legit email through Google, and mm-hmm. all of a sudden people responded. Mm-hmm. And that's not only other breweries, but it's also suppliers. Mm-hmm. You reach out to, I reached out to 10 or 15 different manufacturers, and it was all through my personal email, and they don't respond. All yeah. of a sudden, as soon as it's Jason at the time, hoppabrewing.com, mm-hmm. they respond right away.
Yeah.
So I think if you're serious, and obviously you don't want to screw around with people, but
right.
if you're like serious and you're at that step, pay the money and get a website. You're going to make your job easier.
Yeah. 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 That was one of the first things we did was get subduedbrewing.com.
Yeah. Yeah.
And yeah, it makes all the difference. People respond within a day as yeah. opposed to never.
Yeah, exactly. They take you serious all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, totally. Well, hey, Jason, thanks for coming. Really appreciate you taking the time out and doing it. Is there anything that I didn't ask that you'd want to address or you want to cover?
No, I think that's it. I really appreciate the time.
It sure.
Was, yeah. It's fun. I guess just come check it out. We're excited to
I'm
be
excited. Yeah.
Yeah, the next thing in Bellingham. It's early summer.
Summerish.
Yeah. Yeah, we're gonna have a lot of fun. I yeah. hope to make it kind of a staple and two, yeah, just come by and see the progress too. Yeah.
Well, you had me when I read when you were talking to Lane for the Tap Trail, yeah. like having couches.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Stuff. Like just hang spots, like little hang corners. That's yep. what I feel is missing in Bellingham.
Absolutely.
Little areas where you can go like hang out and have conversations yep. and, you know, being family oriented
yep.
brewery that you're going to have. How late are you planning on being open?
So we plan to have 11 to 10 o'clock hours, 7 days a week. And that's one thing early on. I've actually had people advise me against it. But early on we've wanted to be consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And so consistent hours, 7 days a week,
yeah.
Has sort of been our thing.
And reality will dictate what you end up doing.
Yeah, sure.
You know,
yeah. I mean, I don't, great. Yeah, I don't think it will have to change just looking at other examples. Yeah.
As someone who has Mondays and Tuesdays off and places are closed on Mondays and Tuesdays. Yeah.
Well, that
bums me out
totally
that I can't go places.
Mondays sometimes. Are industry night too, because
yeah.
most bars are a lot of bars are closed
yeah.
Monday.
Yeah.
So that's when you get the people that you want to see and hang out with. Mm-hmm. I'll probably bartend Mondays,
right?
Yeah, it'll exactly. be a fun night to bartend.
Exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, no, we're just really stoked to make this a reality and have a fun place where people can hang out. And
yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, we'll see you there.
All right. Cheers.
Cheers.
Nice. Yeah, thanks again.
That was a lot of fun. Enjoy it. It's when I was
oh yeah. Jason's a solid guy who clearly has a vision for what Stemma will ultimately be. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully they can make the Bellingham Beer Week deadline, but you know, it's kind of out of their hands. Fingers crossed. And hey, you heard the man. He's going to be hiring a brewer, so fire up those resumes. As always, if there's someone you'd like me to sit down with, please let us know. Contact us through the Tap Trail website. Maybe I'll see if I can get an email out of them so we can chat one-on-one. If you enjoy these Tapped In podcasts, please take a moment to rate us with all the stars on your podcast service of choice. It makes a big difference in where we can be heard and whether this experiment will be able to continue or not. We also welcome your comments and questions. Again, I keep threatening to make these longer, but once more, it worked out that this was only a little over an hour when you add my yakking on to everything. So hit us up with questions or comments. We want to hear from you. Talk to us. Be our friend. Speaking of friends, I feel that I would be remiss in not mentioning that the brewing community lost a force of nature recently. Jim Parker, who some of you may remember from Culshin, Menace, the Oyster Bar, and from just being a general cad about town, passed away recently. far too young and with far too many innovative ideas still in that head of his. It's not an overstatement to say that if you appreciate the craft brewing industry, you can thank Jim Parker for helping it make it what it is today. So, RIP, Jim, and you'll be missed. All right, well, there's more on the way, so make sure and subscribe so that you don't miss out. And again, thanks for listening and spreading the word. I will talk to you soon. Cheers.